This morning, again, we're going to hear from Dr. Nandesha. Dr. Nandesha is currently serving as Dean, Fisheries College and Research Institute under the Milinandu Veterinary and Animal Science University in Tukide. Hope I got it right. Tamil Nadu in India. He has more than 27 years of experience in teaching, research and involvement in the field of aquaculture in India, Cambodia, Bangladesh, with long-term contracts. He spent nearly a decade at the grassroots level on aquaculture projects, supported by Oxfam in Cambodia and CARE in Bangladesh. Professor Nandesha has made significant contributions to aquaculture, teaching, research, development, and these are recognized through a number of awards. Some of the prominent awards that reflect his contribution to these areas include Best Teacher Award of the Professional Fisheries Graduates Forum, the Jubilee Award of the International Foundation of Science, Sweden for the research contribution in fish nutrition, Professor HPC Shet Award of the Indian branch of Asian Fisheries Society in recognition of his contribution to aquaculture research and development. Saha Maitri Award of the Royal Government of Cambodia for the exemplary contributions made for aquaculture and human resource development of that country. The Asian Fisheries Society Gold Medal Award in recognition of his contribution to Asian Fisheries Science and Society. And in this brief, what is left out, you know, Dr. Nandesha personally as a vehement promoter of gender issues in aquaculture and fisheries in general, as you have heard this morning in his contributions. Professor Nandesha, please.
Good morning to everyone. I think this is three different topics being clubbed together. I'll try my best to do justification for each of these. And also, I would say that this is a topic which should have come at the very beginning of the this Congress in order to make sure that what is the real contribution of the scientists and the farmers in the changing aquaculture scenario and its production. But nevertheless, I hope that this will become the premier issue in the upcoming events. Now, although we are bringing the indigenous knowledge in the title later, I will take this up in the first stage itself to talk about how the indigenous knowledge, which has been the basis of the innovations of the farmer, has contributed for the aquaculture development in Asia. I'll try to give you the brief contents of my presentation, which talks about the indigenous knowledge, then talks about the farmer's innovation and the dissemination of the success stories and what the lessons that we could take from these three issues. And I've also made my presentations to be more pictorial in order to make sure that you all keep alive this being the last presentation. And we have heard a lot about this family contribution to the aquaculture that has led to all this development, who identified several hundred years ago that aquaculture is the most potential tool, not only for poverty alleviation, but for everything to improve the situation of the people. Now, this is the definition of the indigenous knowledge. How do we define the indigenous knowledge? Is indigenous traditional knowledge is a type of innovation by farmers that is stored in people's memories and activities, and it is expressed in the form of stories, songs, proverbs, dances, myths, folklore, cultural values, beliefs, rituals, community laws, local language and taxonomy, agricultural practices, equipment, materials, plant species, and animal breeds. This is just for your information to let you know that indigenous knowledge is the one that dates back to centuries. But this knowledge keeps transforming itself as the society develops. Now, I will narrate a few of the examples that justify the contributions of our indigenous knowledge to the present day evolution of aquaculture. I'll not go into the details since you heard many of this. This is the rice fish culture system. And I think on the indigenous knowledge, you see the most latest paper by Peter Edwards that's being incorporated in the new technologies in aquaculture. Now, this rice fish culture system has contributed and continuing to contribute, and though many people think that this is going to be eroded in the upcoming years, we still believe that rice fish system will continue to be the main focus in this century. Now, in the brackish waters areas where the sea and the inland waters join together, there are a lot of systems that have been existent since different parts of the world, and some of the famous systems have also contributed for different varieties of livelihoods of the people, and these are in danger and they are being protected with the government policies. This is, I think, in the Professor Swaminathan's presentation, as also he identified one of the other systems that exists in Kerala, which is almost similar to what you see in Holland. And we also have this other famous system called as Gazan in Goa, which is again under the threat due to urbanization and various other factors. And these are the systems that are being protected. We will not go deep into this, but just to bring to you a kind knowledge. And as I said, that these systems do exist in different parts of the world, and these are some of the examples that we have drawn from other parts of the out of Asia to let you know that the brackish water systems do provide considerable amount of livelihood for the people, and they provide a special situation that need protection. Now, the developments have made a lot of impacts, mainly on the negative side. For example, for the rice fish culture system, where we try to increase the productivity by improving the management practices, we went in for more inorganics and pesticides. This has caused a lot of damage to the rice fish ecosystem. And also in the coastal areas, as I said, there are human inhabitation, urbanization also has caused many damages. But all at the same time, there is also a new form of innovations that is taking place, that is the integrated pest management, which is bringing back the old system to make sure that the people are still able to grow the rice fish rice without the use of pesticides. And we believe that in this century, this is going to catch up, and probably both fish ponds and the rice fields will continue to coexist. Now we come to the integrated farming systems. A lot of these slides contributed by Peter Edwards, wherein the systems which originated in China have transferred to various parts of Asia and also other parts of the world. And when I come to the dissemination strategy, I will mention about that. But these integrated systems are also confronted with challenges, with the new problems that are emerging as we go along, you would see. But nevertheless, we must remember these integrated farming systems are the one which are most suitable for the resource-poor village farmers. So you cannot just forget and think about the business aquaculture without considering the aquaculture that's suitable for the rural people. This is again just to give you some of the examples of that are existing in other than in China, Vietnam, Indonesia, where they have caught up in a very big way. The duckfish culture, which in Vietnam, which is making a big impact on the people, and also the cultivation of vegetables with the fish and using the dikes for the vegetable cultivation. And this integrated farming with the grass and other vegetables, as I said, is making good impact in many parts of the world, but getting replaced with the fed aquaculture system, with a lot of multinational companies promoting feed as the sole source for as the pond input. And I think one of the other important traditional knowledge which has been harnessed to the advantage of the human being and given the scientific intensive science investigation is this periphyton technology, which was reported way back by Robert Wellcome from Africa. But later on, we do recognize that these systems do exist in Asia, and these are being now used to bring in better benefit to the people. Now, as I said, in the case of rice fish, also in the integrated farming, the system has been now endangered with the new diseases that have cropped up, and also the factory-made feeds that are propagating, mainly the use of feeds instead of the integrated farming system, instead of promoting both. So it is important that the documentation of the indigenous knowledge prevalent in aquaculture and their validation through analysis of such knowledge through research would help in stimulating aquaculture development in the coming decade. And this is something that has not been done. Even in India, an effort has been made to document the indigenous knowledge in the agriculture, but that effort has captured a very small fraction of what is happening in aquaculture. So there is a wealth of indigenous knowledge. When you look at the Asia, which has transformed the aquaculture scenario, is largely because of the indigenous knowledge. When you compare, which is not happening in Latin America or Africa, it's because there has been no indigenous knowledge. And all that has to happen is now with the new technology, new generation, under which I will come to that later on. I think this is the figure, and I would like to draw your attention to the innovations of the people, which has not been recognized aptly, and often the scientists are being blamed for taking away several of the innovations that are being made by the farmers and claiming the credit for themselves. I think this is one of the pictures from Cambodia, a farmer who built the Chinese hatchery just by spending about less than $50 by using the plastic sheets and made a big success, and he has now transformed himself. And this is another picture which shows you the people in Bangladesh who have invented several varieties of feed-making machines locally to help the plant farming industry. And also the rice fish farming, which caught up in a big way in Bangladesh, but now changing it in a different farm. This is the picture from Latin America, wherein the water harvesting device has been devised to provide the water supply to the system. Now I come to the most innovations. I am not sure whether many of you who are sitting here will agree with the Chinese hatchery is an innovation of farmers, but I think Chinese do recognize that it is a combination of farmers, scientists, and the soldiers who work together to make this Chinese hatchery into a reality. I think I bring the another picture which documents about the bund breeding, which has been accomplished by the farmers in West Bengal almost at the same time to close the breeding cycle of the Indian major calves. We consider this as some of the most significant innovations that have been made. I will not go into the details of that, but I will go into the most inspiring innovation that has been made by the farmers in India and Myanmar, almost on the same fashion in terms of culturing the calves, particularly the Rohu as the main species. These farmers demonstrated that it's the large ponds which are more suited for the culture of calves. I think these are the feedbacks you will see. These are simple feedbacks provided with feed to make sure that the feed is not wasted. It looks simple, but I think this is one of the most dramatic innovation that changed the whole face of the aquaculture in Andhra Pradesh. It's also true in Myanmar. I'll come to that later on. Then you come here. I think last week we had a workshop in Manila where an analysis showed most of the fish stock is lost, and we have less than 40 to 50% survival in the pond. The farmers in Andhra realized they have to make sure a bigger seed is available. These are the seeds that are stunted for 6 months, and when you put them into the pond, they catch up the growth in no time. And the fertilization strategy was completely changed. The feeding and the species composition from 6 species, they targeted to the market where there's a big demand and achieved a production of 14 tons. And now an average farmer production is anywhere between 8 to 10 tons, which has never been accomplished in the research station. But please remember, they use the scientific principles evolved by the scientists to make sure that they develop the system that is meeting their economic necessities. Otherwise, they cannot do aquaculture for fancy. Now, this is another most interesting innovation. Peter visited about 4 years ago. I think after 4 years, there's a complete change now. Now, they're going for another stage where the stunted fish is grown to about 250 to 300 grams, put into the pond, and within about 6 months, they attain about 1 kilo. And in a year, they harvest 2 crops of carbs, which is very important. Reducing the duration is the key for the farmer to make sure that he has enough money in the pocket. I think I made a visit with the help of Professor Peter Edwards to Myanmar to see what is happening there. And I was stunned to see exactly what is happening. A lot of the things in India, there is no transformation, but people have invented by themselves and they have gone further to make sure that the fish they are producing is of very good quality, meets the market requirement. You can see here, they are looking at now, trying to develop their own strains of carbs to make sure that they are able to meet the export demand. You have heard about this in the presentations, wherein they are earning a huge amount of money from the export of the fish. Here you see here, again, the simple feeding devices that have been developed when they feed rice bran, and the Vietnam is moving very aggressively for the pellet feed. So all these innovations are made by the people, and this has transformed their livelihood. But this is not being taken into consideration. And if we could take this and move as partners, I think there is much that could be accomplished. And I come to this story of Cambodia. I'm sorry for the wrong spelling, a country where I spent much part of my younger life. And I was very inspired with the kind of developments that have taken place in cage culture. I will not go into the Cambodian cage culture system, but I come to the Indonesia, which has made also equally good amount of progress. And there are many lessons that we could learn from the accomplishments of the farmer to transfer this technology to other countries and make sure that how this could be scientifically validated so that it brings better economic returns to the people who adopt this technology. And yesterday you would have heard about it. The farmers who started much ahead have developed into a beautiful seed supply network, the marketing channel, and making sure that every feed that is put into the pond is not wasted. There's a system where you have the high-value species of red tilapia and the common carp that is grown, and below that you have the black tilapia. So two crops being grown by this farmer who is earning a huge amount of money. I come to this story of Pangasius, which has been talked to many times. And I think when I was in Cambodia, we started looking at this, which is called as the toilet fish, you know, which is not a big demand because a lot of the Vietnamese would put up the toilet and use this fish for growing. And you wouldn't prefer this as a fish in the market. But when we did the survey, way back around in 90s, we 93-94, we found that the farmers could get even up to 100 tons in the stagnant water ponds. So I'm not surprised with a good water exchange, farmers have been able to achieve now 300 to 400 tons. But the question that we need to ask, what is the level of science that has gone from the scientist side to understand this accomplishment? How do we take this message for the farmer to bring the greater benefit to the people? And I think there is much that has been talked. I will not go into this, but the industry is now no longer remains as a small farmer industry. It is an industry where the people can invest the money, can take the risk. If he cannot take the risk, there is no way that he can survive. So how do you reduce that risk? To reduce that risk, you need to understand what the farmer is doing. Now, I come to this seed nursing technology again in Indonesia, where they made a breakthrough in groupers. Breeding and seed rearing technology. And here again, there is much need for farmer-to-farmer exchange. For example, the farmers in Vietnam still accomplish a survival rate of Pangasius around 25 to 30%. Whereas if you go to Indonesia, they accomplish around 60%. So there is much that can be learned through country-to-country, people-to-people exchange with the group of breeding and the seed nursing, which has been now decentralized and the people have improved the technology. There are significant adaptive research done by the people which has reduced the nursing stage considerably and increased the profitability of the people. So what we need to recognize that any technology that you recommend is never accepted by the people. They do adaptive research. And if we can partner with them, we can bring a lot of benefits to the science and to the bigger population. And I think this story was put up in the morning. I will not go into this. This is a recycling of the water resource, which has got a lot of application. And that is one of the Bangkok Declaration strategy that was identified. And that was the only thing I could see. Nothing about the indigenous knowledge, nor the farmers' innovation, excepting the dissemination comes under the... So here, there is so much that has been done by the farmers. And how could you bring this to the other people who need that technology immediately? And I think that's an area that we need to consider. And here again, the Artemia culture has been so much simplified by the farmer to cater the industry and save a huge amount of cost. And the cost that is being saved by the farmer can take care of most of the other operational expenses. Now, I think Bangladesh is another country, and I always consider poverty is the power of innovation. And I think Bangladesh has developed in many areas, and this gear farming is one good example where a farmer converted the paddy field to grow the prawns, has spread like a wildfire, not only in the southwestern part of Bangladesh, to the entire Bangladesh. And this has been worked very well with the Bangladesh Agricultural University to bring in more science into this and spread this technology. And this woman who is laughing, smiling, is a question of reducing the risk. I told you, we all talk about the technology, but we don't talk about the risk. How do you reduce the risk? Why aquaculture is not being picked up by the poor people? And I think this is where it's not just growing the prawn. By using the other resources, you could enhance the income. And this integrated farming has made this technology. Today, Bangladesh contributes about 28,000 tons. 98% of it is exported. There are hundred thousands of families whose poverty is alleviated through this prawn farming. So this is a clear living example if you want to see. And I consider these prawns are very powerful in terms of poverty alleviation. I think yesterday, again, you listened to another brilliant talk of yesterday from Shakuntala. And Professor Wahab was generous to give me some of the slides. But I would like to draw the attention of Professor Wahab, whom this farmer also knows about it. Much before this molas discussion started, in a corner of Tripura close to Bangladesh, he started growing mola with calves and making huge money. Huge money. And this is now being recognized. It's not a weed fish, but a fish that can bring benefit to the people in terms of nutrition and economy. Per kilo, mola is about 200 rupees, as compared to the calves, which are sold for 60 to 70 rupees. And here again, you see the technology being taken further. I think I would like to bring to Thailand, where a number of innovations have taken place. When I come later, I will explain the AIT contribution in terms of developing the tilapia technology. But what you would see in this picture is when you give the necessary skills and the confidence to the people on the science of the technology that you are advocating, people transform the technology to suit their condition and adopt them. When you teach only the theory, it's hardly ever picked up. And I think AIT deserves the all appreciation for what it has done in terms of spreading the technology, which has been picked up now by many countries in Asia and the other parts of the world. The African case studies, here again, as I said, in Asia, when you look at the indigenous knowledge that is existing. So even whether the scientists are sleeping or working, the farmers continue to work because they have something borrowed from the indigenous system. So they continue to struggle. But whereas in Africa, a lot of things didn't happen, investment. It is because there was no culture. But now you are beginning to change in countries like Nigeria and Uganda because the capacity building of the people has been done with care that is ensuring the changes that are occurring both in Nigeria and Uganda, which are serving as a classical example of what capacity building can help in terms of technology dissemination. I will not go details of all this, but you would see that We have people from Africa who can explain if there are any questions, if you'd like to go. As they said, in Nigeria, now it's providing livelihood for many people. In Uganda, the aquaculture is growing at a rate of 300%. And this has been triggered by the partnership of the farmers and the scientists and the development workers. Now, as I said, I will not go into the details of this because of the time constraints. I think the person from Mexico could not make it. He went back from the Bangkok airport. And I would share this most brilliant documentation of how a partnership between the farmers and the scientists can transform an industry. An industry where he has tried to apply the science in terms of crayfish culture. And when you work together with the farmer, documenting their aspirations, bringing that into the research design. When you work together and evolve a system, ultimately that is taken up and being sustained. And I would consider this as one of the most important contributions that we received for our panel, but unfortunately, you have to go back. But this again demonstrates that working with the farmers is a key to establish any industry on a commercial scale. Still, it has not taken up. There are many constraints, but these are being addressed, particularly in Mexico. So there are traps that are being designed for protection, the harvesting devices. All these have contributed for the development of this technology. And we have also the tropical gar, another species that has been worked. And here again, these are the examples which clearly demonstrate the partnership between the farmers and the scientist group. Please remember, unlike in Asia, as I said, as there has been no tradition, it is the role of the scientists that has promoted the development of the new technologies. I think this is, again, an integration that has been brought into with the fish culture, and that is bringing the greater benefit to the people. This, I think, species is now catching up. They are not only doing the breeding and enhancing the capture fishery sector by stocking using the seeds that are being produced of the local species. This is, again, the Colombia example, which demonstrates that more than three different native species have been successfully bred and promoted for culture along with the other species that are already being introduced into the country, and which again provide us that there is an opportunity to learn from many of these countries as well, that the good partnership would help probably in this part of the world in terms of promoting new technologies by working closely with the farmers. Now, I think this is, again, the Colombia examples. I would bring into this Mexico, where the shrimp culture industry has also undergone a greater transformation by close partnership between the scientific community and the farmers. And I think that partnership has enabled Mexico to survive several of the catastrophes and emerge as one of the important shrimp-producing country. Now, some of these things, I didn't complete the list, but for me, poverty is the key for innovation. When you have a poverty combined with a desire, you always look for innovations. And I use Bangladesh as a classical example, and I say that poverty alleviation could be done by promoting farmer participatory research, where you fill their capacity in terms of knowledge, give them the skill, they do innovate. And the necessity is the mother of all innovations. The culture influences a lot, the extension methods that are adopted. Yesterday you were hearing the story that a lot of the extension people fail or making an impact because they think that you are only a delivery of message. But you don't understand that you have a bigger opportunity to work with each of the farmer, a different setup, and come up with the new information. I think that's where farmer participatory research try to identify itself as a distinct discipline from a simple extension approach. And if we can incorporate that research methodology and approach among the extension people, probably you would do this. And I think policies of the governments is very important. Look at America today. Why it is powerful? It's because the innovations. And I think the policies of the governments have done good thing for innovations. In many cases, they have kept silent. But in many of the other opportunities, farmers have continued to do that because of their survival strategy. Let me come to the dissemination of some of the successful stories where we have some classical examples that we can draw. I have not been able to cover every contributions that we received. I am only giving the tips of the iceberg on the capacity of the people in terms of innovation. Now, in terms of disseminations, we have some very good examples on how combining science with people and the farmers, the people at the policy level, can make a greater impact in terms of dissemination. Wherever farmers have had success to adequate foundation of knowledge on the science of a technology, they have been able to constantly improve the production system and assuring sustainability and adaptation to local conditions. I think this is the key message even in the farmer field schools. You help the farmer to discover how do you control the pest. You must give him a knowledge, go through that process. Then only he is able to understand. If you just ask him to stop the pesticide application, he will never do that. I think this is the foundation, and that's where the human capacity building comes into the picture. Now, I will draw some of the best examples as China has done the great service to the fish culture sector. They have also gone one step further in terms of disseminating their information. This was started as an FAO project, UC Center, most of you know. But when you look at some of the upcoming graphs and figures, you would see that the number of people that have been trained and exposed to this Chinese system. It may not have had an 100% impact, but I think the way that they have been able to learn in the Chinese system, the people what they are following, had a tremendous impact in terms of spreading this information. Look at this. We have number of countries we tried to look at. There are almost from all parts of the world, people have undergone training. Now many of you know already, but for your information, now Chinese government provides complete support for the travel and the training. I consider this as one of the good gestures that is being taken by the government in terms of dissemination of information. Look at the number of trainees. Here again, you have people from Africa and the Asia who have undergone the training there and have had an impact in different level. And we also tried to look at the gender dimension where still the number of people who are going are less because there are not many people. So it's important that you keep increasing the number and make sure that it goes on. There are a number of lessons that have been learned. Practical training important to trainees has enabled them to gain confidence because a lot of it is on hands-on training. And they also, the trainees are brought from different cultures and it provides a unique opportunity to do the networking and understand the culture of each other countries. And this, I see that beyond the training, it has a much greater impact in terms of building the linkages. So I come to this Asian Institute of Technology, which we all must recognize. Peter Edwards, who thought about education as the key for foundation, for development, and though it is in the last session, FAO is beginning to recognize education as key. And I think this is where AIT took up boldly tilapia as the species of their logo and promoted tilapia as the key species. Now it is emerging as one of the most important species cultured in Asia. They have postgraduate program, and these people drawn from different countries have got the hands-on training, and that confidence has spread to many different locations. There is no doubt, and I am more than convinced, and I speak with 101% confidence. Now, in addition to this, I think it's not only just the education, the strategic research thought and putting that thought into the education. Please remember, education is always a continuous process. Unless you build the capacity for the people to analyze, that's where we say, give them science and not just the technology, so they do the analysis. I think that has gone in, and they also started the short-term training program. And I think you will see that the impact of this, which David Little did, one of our panel member, in terms of technology development in sex-reverse tilapia, and it's being widespread. I would like to draw the attention because training is easy. Everybody, whenever it is a foreign country, get the training of the people of your choice, put them and come and enjoy and go back. Now, this man is from Bangladesh, Abdullah Aki, who now, after attending the training, has started the cage culture, and it is spreading like a wildfire. And I have seen, and there are a lot of things that he attributes for the training that he received, and also the visit he made to the farmer's field, where he could gain that required level of confidence. So with that, we move on to the next one. A good example, yesterday those of you who were here would have learned about this Naka. I consider this as one of the fantastic platform that has been created in this part of the world where there is a lot of complexities to bring the governments together and use that vehicle as a medium for dissemination of knowledge, raising the issues of concern. I think Naka has set a good example, and the first one, I think the success stories of Asian aquaculture is one of the very good examples besides the Aquaculture Asia, a magazine wherein I started writing a column on farmers as scientists. In fact, when I sent my article first as farmers or scientists, the editor wrote back and he said all the scientists might be offended. So let's put it as farmers as scientists. I did maintain that column for quite some time. I think that's the reason they called me here, but I need to maintain back. But what is important is this institution has been able to create good examples through good partnership. I think that partnership, which you will see later on when I come to this Empeda-Naka relationship, has resulted in creating institutions and the people who can bring the transformation. The lessons, I think yesterday with the Naka example, they are trying to make sure that several other regional bodies are coming up in Africa, in Latin America. And I'm sure as long as there is a transparency, a clear understanding of why are we coming together, these organizations will be successful. I think Naka has done that service. Governments have been generous in terms of continuing to work with this regional body, which has done the service in many different ways. Now, I think I take this Naka example further forward to demonstrate how the good relationship and the scientific approach to a dissemination strategy can bring greater benefit. NAXA, National Center for Sustainable Aquaculture, wherein they tried to address the most critical problem of prawn farming, shrimp farming, and that science-based approach helped to build the confidence. And I think now it's more than 10 years now this has gone to building itself as an institution. And you have heard much about this. There is a clusters, and these clusters are functioning very well. And I have had the opportunity to visit this. And I think I would like to draw your attention to this particular table. How can the scientists benefit? I think Umesh on the panel, he gave me just this most recent production statistics where with some of the farmers who are culturing fish and shrimp as the rotational crop, they are getting the better yield. This is with some of the ponds. This careful observation gives rise to many other opportunities for our interventions. And this is where the scientists need to understand that by working closely with farmers, you can get several of the clues that can bring in greater benefit. This data is still under process, but that is something that we can do. Now, I think I would like to point out here, there are many people who think that the NAXA has been successful. Why? And I attribute one reason. They all are contract employees. If they don't perform, they'll be fired. So this is something, a management strategy, which probably we should think of as... Now I'm coming very closer to finish up my talk. And I think this, those who are member would understand this fantastic tilapia-based email group where we have more than 3,000 members and people ask varieties of questions, and only one person with a vision who started several years ago has come to this stage where the information exchange has been made very easy. What I would like to emphasize is with the modern technology, when we have good things, it's very easy to disseminate the information. And he says, every day he spends anywhere between 15 minutes minimum. Sometimes it could go to 2 to 3 hours, but he enjoys doing this. About Sarnisa, you have heard already, and I think this is now doing a great service in terms of bringing a close partnership among the researchers and the farmers in the African context. There are more than 1,500 members, and there are many good things that are happening. And I think these fish seed networks, which are existing in different countries, particularly in Cambodia, Vietnam, Thailand, Indonesia, are doing great service, including India, in terms of providing the seed requirement to the people. And these networks are something that are getting institutionalized. There are other examples that I will not go into the details because of the time. But here again, there are many good examples that have been created where the close partnership between the institutions and the people can bring greater benefit. This is a picture I think I showed you earlier where the people partnership with the research organizations can bring in benefits to people and ideas to researchers so that their research becomes more responsible to the people's necessities. Now, I will not go into the Bangladesh because Bangladesh did a great job in terms of promoting the carp culture through NGOs. There are many successful examples that we can use from Bangladesh. There is also good examples from Africa where the linkage between the scientists and the farmers, as I said, has resulted in the uptake of the technology by the people. Now, the factors that contribute for successful dissemination is placing emphasis on science, emphasis on skills, choosing the right persons for training, involving stakeholders and building consensus, transparent relationship with the community, good documentation, the most important one, farmer-to-farmer focus. And the way forward, these are the simple recommendations, very clear. Document indigenous technology prevalent in different countries, validate the technologies, and scale up good practices to bring better benefits to people. Promote research in partnership with farmers to address the field problems. Increase the role of farmers in research planning and implementation. Promote farmer-to-farmer exchange in all possible places and opportunities. Place emphasis on building skills with knowledge. Now, this is my last slide, but I would like all of you to get up. And if they are sleeping, no, you please sit. Have a look at this most fantastic innovations that have come of this year. The farmer you see on the other side is a farmer from Wuhan from China. Just a week ago, he has designed an aircraft for $800. Okay? Look at this lady. The treadle pump which transformed the complete scenario of Bangladesh, which is also helping many people. This is a school teacher who did the innovations of these treadle pumps. I come to this India, where there is a lot of emphasis now on harnessing the grassroots level innovative capacity of the people. But this farmer who has evolved by himself several varieties of grams blames the scientists for not being attentive to his requirements. And this is where often it is considered that the scientists try to take away the ideas and they are in a running process to claim the ownership rather than working with the farmers. But this Innovation Foundation of India, I suggest all of you to make a visit, which gives you a complete idea about how India is moving towards the innovation at the grassroots level. And I think I'd like to draw all your attention to this famous quote. For a researcher, what is needed is common sense and curiosity. You don't need an university degree. You require for education. But as long as you possess this common sense and curiosity, you become a great man. So everyone who can possess that common sense and curiosity can become scientist and innovate. And that's where we need to recognize the people. This is my last slide, wherein we also have an organization which has been created by professionals like MSF, Medicine Sans Frontiers, which brought benefits to the medical community. And this is the aquaculture professionals community, wherein you all could join together to bring smiles to the poor people by encouraging them to be innovative and adapt you. Thank you very much.
Very strong presentation indeed. Thank you, Professor Nandesha. You'll agree with me, audience, that it was worth the time and extending it beyond the 30 minutes. Though we still have some 15 minutes or so for discussion, and I would request Professor Nandesha and the rest of the panel team to come in front. And Prof, if you can note the recommendation and the comments of the audience out of discussion, it will be very important. We are out of time, so please, if you can hurry, yep, so that we cut in more comments and concerns as possible.
Yeah, well, I'm Nandesha.
Dave Little, Rule Bosma.
Atanda is my name.
Matthias Halvart. Ram Bujel.
Umesh.
UI.
Okay, audience, please, any comment? I'll start with the Peter.
Peter Edwards from the Asian Institute of Technology. That was a very interesting presentation, Nandesha, and thank you very much for mentioning AIT. The point I would like to make is that a lot of these pharma innovations are actually new. I mean, we're all well aware that there's a tremendous tradition of aquaculture, especially in Asia, which, and this is what we tried to put a scientific research base on in our early days at AIT, but a lot of the innovations that Nandesha's mentioned are new. So this is an ongoing process, and we need to document this. And one example you raise, a very interesting one, which is the rice fish. Most of the rice fish that Nandesha mentioned that's bringing great benefit to farmers in parts of India and southern Bangladesh, and also in parts of lowland China, is they're not raising small fish for domestic or local consumption. They're raising high-value fish for domestic and even for export markets, for example, macrobrachium in Bangladesh. So this is an interesting combination between traditional and farmer-developed technology and also modern technology and global, increasing global interfaces with aquaculture.
This is Silvaraj from Kyushu University. Sir, thank you for your very interesting presentation. So my question is, like, maybe these farmer innovations can make a big contribution in short term. So what my question is, like, to make it sustainable, what I'm interested is, like, I think it should be documented, and documentation should be very clear, because scientists normally their thinking is very different compared to normal farmer or other people. Because farmers don't record, for example, you mentioned the story of Indian major carps, culture of Indian major carps in big ponds. Well, farmers would not have recorded the stocking density. But when it goes to the scientists will think, okay, what was the stocking density? And so what I suggest is, like, the farmer's innovation should be recorded in a very scientific way so that it will be sustainable in future. Thank you, sir.
Yeah. I think I would like to respond to this question. If you go to any of the farmers in Andhra Pradesh, you would get every details of what he is putting into the pond, because they are doing aquaculture for business, not for subsistence. So this is the first point. But there is a second point to it. For example, there is a farmer who accomplished up to 15 tons, and the same emperor gave an award. And he has been one of the most innovative farmers who purchased a microscope, started manipulating from 1 ton and brought it up to 14 tons. And I was asking him, why don't you document this so that the scientific community can benefit on how you are able to take this technology by using almost 90% single species. Please remember, whenever we talk of Indian Chinese calf production, it is the 6 species that was thought about to get a production of 10 or 12 tons. But these farmers have now been able to demonstrate that single species with 90% stocking, you can still get a production up to that next level. But the important point that you raised is looking, giving a scientific investigation into the process that is going on and trying to document it carefully is something that's what is needed. That's where I said the partnership between the institutions and the farmers can go a big way in taking to the next level without the lapse of time.
Because you can't ask a farmer to document. So some people can write and others can't. Some farmers are very observative and they can change a technology, but they will not be able to write it down for somebody. Scientists are useful over there. Or perhaps journalists can do a better job. Most of the best extension papers are not written by scientists, but by journalists.
Well, I think maybe there's an opportunity there to link student research. I mean, Nandisha's presentation has clearly shown that there's a lot out there, and this is just maybe the tip of the iceberg. We're just not looking closely enough. And if we link students' research with documentation of these case studies, then maybe we can document more of this. I think there's a clear opportunity there.
Congratulations, Dr. Nandisha, for your excellent presentation. What I wanted to say is, this morning we were trying to award the scientist who made a poster presentation. What are we going to do? How are we going to honor these innovators from all over the world? The benefit of their toil, we are all enjoying sitting here in the 5-star hotels and air-conditioned rooms. Is there any way a few can bring to the attention of the world the great innovators who are benefiting the rest of us? I think we should find a way of commemorating them.
I think that's a great recommendation. Hope Professor Nandesh, you have captured it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Lim Song from Cambodia. According to what your presentation is very good, we found that you have experienced a lot in aquaculture development in many countries, particularly in Cambodia. Since 92 until 97, Dr. Nandesh have been working with us closely, and at the same time, he also seeking for the scholarship for master and PhD degree in a number of people in Cambodia. What I very interested your presentation, almost the last point, is the way forwards. Yeah, very interesting. That I think maybe why don't you seek for another way to go one more step to apply your way forward in Cambodia, as well as in the region of the lower Mekong Delta. Thank you.
I think FAO, I hope that they would take this issue seriously. I think we must thank Melba, who included this farmers' innovations as a topic way back in 2006 in the WUSI workshop on fish seed production. I think that has given one step further to bring the topic to this level. As I said, the indigenous knowledge, if you see India, which has invested huge amount of money in documenting the agricultural knowledge, there are only 3 pages of something which is not very relevant to aquaculture. At this point of time, the Central Institute of Fisheries Education is trying to document this indigenous knowledge, and we have to see what will be the outcome. I think my request for the other people as well to look for the ways on how do we, because Mekong region is one of the region where there's plenty of local knowledge that exists in the whole of Southeast Asian countries, like in China and South Asia. So coming up with documenting this, documenting the innovations of people and giving lead for further research could bring a bigger change for aquaculture development.
Gabriel from Ministry of Fisheries, Namibia. Professor Nandisha is exclusive presentation, I would say. But I have some few comments and to take into considerations. You are talking about the success stories in developing countries, developing world, Bangladesh, Thailand, Vietnam, and Cambodia as well. As I recall, So many success stories, and it's behind something, some approach, some model to work on. You mentioned Farmers Field School. It's an international NGO scares innovations to impose this model. But I would say another models like trickle down system approach, TDS, which was really impact millions of people in this region, like Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, India, and Vietnam. Why I am talking such this model? Because this model to disseminate the technology from the researcher and through the extension worker to the farmers level. And once we produce the identified the some sort of demonstration farmers, the key farmers, then this kind of technology one after the one cycle, the success. And this success in surrounding other communities, the surrounding the other fellow farmers that to follow up. And this kind of technology to just disseminate whole communities. So I think this kind of things to take into consideration, and this is replicable to other African countries. So as you know, as we know, that the African continent, the producing 1.1 to 1.3% of the global production. So we should have to have look at Africa as well, and this is my comments as well. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Kibria, for your suggestion. I think that could be one of the examples for dissemination. But as I said, there are when I was talking about the Bangladesh case, we had used that as one of the possible examples. But I would also like to draw your attention to the yesterday's plenary lecture by Dr. Gupta, where an input that is being given to the people to create an example would not have an impact on the surrounding community because he thinks that you are giving him the input. And I would like to endorse that, and I say that there may be, that could be one of the approaches based on the situations, but there are several other alternatives that we could explore, including the farmer field schools. It's not the CARE innovation. In fact, it is the FAO, which started in a big way in Indonesia, but CARE took it up. And I know practically when we were running 30,000 farmer schools, the urge of the people for the knowledge, when they understand that you are coming down to their level and your interest is to give the knowledge. So there are several approaches that we could try, depending on the country's situation, circumstances, culture, all of this, including the students, putting the students down there, like Nepal is one of the best examples where the AWF is implementing an aquaculture project in the mid-hills where the people have just 1,000 square meter land and their pond area is 30 to 40 square meter. And I am wearing a T-shirt that if you pay $30, you will be helping a poor farmer to build the pond. So aquaculture in different scales, different levels of what you could do is something that we could think about. Thank you.
Quality stuff. It's quality stuff, folks. Roll up.
Also, I want to respond that apart from the documentation of the indigenous knowledge and networking, Nigeria example is where we have benefited from scientific development. The resilience of the African catfish as an aquaculture species was actually developed by the Wageningen University in the Netherlands. It's African fish that was taken from Central Africa to the Netherlands, and the knowledge and the breakthrough in the breeding the techniques well documented, and that is what has revolutionized the propagation of African catfish, especially in Nigeria and Uganda and some other African countries that have. So documentation, there is no way you can do anything, either indigenous knowledge or scientific breakthrough. So it could cut across from anywhere in the world. So we could say African catfish, but perfected abroad, perfected in Europe. So and we are benefiting. So please let us try to document whatever information we had, either indigenous or scientific breakthrough, either through former way or farmer to farmer contact, and a lot of people networked and visited all these places, established contacts with these scientists directly and engaged them to facilitate the development of their facilities. So let us take note of this.
Okay, this is not a question, this is an issue. All of you should have read that one now, by now, Phuket Consensus. The recommendation one, increase the efficiency, effectiveness of governance of the aquaculture sector, recognizing the crucial need for sound policies, strategies, and plan in sustained development, incorporating the principle of ecosystem approach gone. Okay. Now, you mentioned and show a beautiful picture of the rice fish culture. Last, I think Matthias can address this one. The last 15 years, publication after publication coming, when you flood the rice field, the methane emission is going to increase. AIT has a USAID-funded project now, which is working in the several countries with the rice farmer, discouraging flooding the rice field because to reduce the methane emission. That's one example. The second one is those systems that you show in the Vijayawada and Myanmar Indian carp system using powdered feed and the water pollution. And the third example is Cambodian cage culture, you said, but it's banned already because using the small fish as the feed. The fourth one is that you talk about the prawn culture in Bangladesh using the freshwater mussels. Then there's a lot of criticism on the biodiversity. I'm not blaming that one. I also did a consultancy to CARE at that time. Therefore, I couldn't find anything other than mussel to feed the cage fish. So all this system has a conflict with what we are recommending. Therefore, basically, the rice fish, we have to separate the rice and fish, and we have to try to not to use to biodiversity. Therefore, there's a way, how are we going to do the farmer innovation to make ecological? Thank you.
Struggling with technology. Rice fish and methane emissions. I think there are much more simple questions about rice fish than the a bit complex methane emission discussion, where we've had lots of discussion about whether it is appropriate to promote a rice fish system or not. And the simplest one is whether indeed you use water, additional water, fresh water that is scarce for having an additional crop. And I think the simple answer to this is don't go out and try to promote a system where it's not appropriate. There are places where you have water in abundance, and this is where the system is appropriate. And indeed, people are getting benefits out of rice fields without any intervention in terms of stocking of fish. The fish are already there. Now we have to think about these innovations that the farmers are doing, simple innovations that maybe bring up the biomass in the rice fields, and whether these innovations are appropriate also for other areas. And we have a role then to document and disseminate these innovations. Okay, and maybe on the point of the recommendation, yes, that's always the trouble with recommendations that are fairly broad. But mind you, when you have the ecosystem approach in there, then a critical part of the ecosystem approach is to put people first. And if we take it serious, then we listen to the farmers and we put them first. Let me make a last remark, taking advantage that I have the floor now. I think one of the recommendations that may be missing here, and this is something that came out of farmer field school research, but maybe also of trickle-down approach, is that it's critically important to bring the policymakers into the field. The policymakers have to see with their own eyes. Otherwise, if they go about and take decisions of for example, subsidizing pesticides, then your whole integrated pest management approach will have a very difficult stand. But if the policymakers were in the field, if they saw for themselves what the farmers can do, what kind of innovations they have, that there are fish in the field and you will kill them if you apply the pesticides, then you can induce change also at that level. And I think we have to somehow reflect that in the recommendations.
Perhaps one compliment for this methane question. It's very worrisome indeed, but when farmers make innovations, you can be sure that there is a cost-benefit that is good for them, the ratio. But whatever you do, they have to watch also the environmental impact. But that's the other way around also. You cite one negative effect of having water on the field, but there are positive effects. So you have to make a balanced analysis of this, because you reduce pesticide use, because the fish are there to clean your rice field. So you have benefits, and you have to make an equal balance for it, and not just say the system is bad because there is methane produced.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to comment on two points. I'm supposed to be a member of the panel, but because I couldn't contribute anything, I don't feel like sitting there. So anyway, on the point of documentation, I think that there's opportunity now to explore the other, the advancement in documenting things, like, for example, using video, you know, this small thing, this has documented everything that everyone says. And I don't know how much this one is, but this is a very useful tool. So that's one thing. The other thing that I wanted to comment on is raising, giving national recognition to farmer innovator. There are several opportunities that we could explore. I'm not speaking on behalf of FAO, but I think some people knows that every year FAO celebrates one day in October, the World Food Day. Isn't it? It's correct, Matias, no? The World Food Day. And I am aware that there's a big celebration at the headquarters, but there are also activities that are being organized by our sub-regional and regional offices that are present in any country. Sometimes we have a walk to support the World Food Day, but since this is World Food Day, I think it's there's opportunity to explore national-level activities and include fish as an important subject to focus on that celebration. I am also aware that there are initiatives on the side of the government talking about policy, giving recognition to farmers. Like, for example, in the Philippines, this is initiated by the Department of Agriculture. I don't remember which day of the month or day of the week, but every year they have a recognition for farmers who can bring the biggest eggplant, the biggest watermelon. And in the Philippines, we are also celebrating 1 week every year in October, what we call as Fish Conservation Week, and they are giving also recognition to farmer innovation. So these are things that can be explored to raise awareness on farmer innovation. Thank you.
I was wondering how this farmer innovation process, which I think is very inspiring, of course, and a very nice presentation, I was wondering how you interface that with something like introduced species. So, you know, the farmers I speak with are quite often very interested in new species, things they can bring in. In Brazil, where I work, there's been, you know, the peacock bass, for example, which has been introduced into larger portions of the continent, is creating quite a bit of damage. There are native catfish hybrids, which are being farmed, which are also escaping and having an impact, both of those farmer innovations, for example. And I think there are other ones, like the tilapia question, of course. I was wondering how one can interface some of these issues with, you know, the farmer-driven interests.
I think not that every innovations that is being made by the farmers are good. I think that's where the role of the development agencies come into the picture, in ensuring that when the farmers are going wrong, that's where I repeat to emphasize once again that working closely with the farmers, you would be able to alert the danger that might eventually come in. And I think this is the key role. And the system, what you are describing, it's all with the scientific community to make a systematic analysis and build relationship with the community and try to
bringing the issues that need to be considered. And I think that is only the building partnership confidence with a group of people who can believe in what you are saying is the right, and then only they would start working with you.
Yeah. Okay, that's perhaps to complement. So what Matthias says, the introduction is not an innovation, but it's an initiative of somebody that has been badly educated in the field. Somebody yesterday talked about educate consumers for because some people think that consumers don't know what to eat or want to eat. But I think you also have to take care that you educate farmers that take initiatives and to train them very well to be aware of negative effects that can bring abroad, bring forward.
Charintu Pant from World Fish Center. I got a very brief suggestion actually for the recommendation part. These, all these farmers' indigenous knowledge, farmers' innovations are very dynamic. In the next 10 years, whatever Nandisha presented at the moment, you'll see much, much refined, changed, adjusted to changing context. So one of the important things would be to keep monitoring these systems, how farmers keep improving the systems, changing to alternative systems. And if we can do that, probably we can say that, okay, say all the fresh fish-based system might be been gradually changed to other type systems. Rice fish system might be gradually being adjusted to other way. So these are the things probably we would need to keep monitoring in a way that, okay, how systems are progressing. That's all. Thank you.
That's a critical, I think, recommendation for the panel.
Could,
I think should be noted.
I wonder if I could ask a question of a member of the audience, because I think it's pertinent. And that is Patrick Sorgelos, in your presentation. I think, if I understood it right, you saw that farmer innovation had been very, very important in the rapid development of aquaculture. But there was now a need for more science information would start to dominate, I think, the discussion. I wonder if you might want to say a few words, having seen that presentation that's just been given, because I think it's pertinent. It's about local information versus outside information, what these various knowledges have to bear on our industry.
Yeah. Well, I think I just appreciate what has been discussed and presented by Nandisha, and a number of the suggestions that came here from this side, I've forgotten who it was. I think we should take up responsibility at universities to have scientists joining with these farmer innovations. I think this is where we could really see an interesting synergy, the remarks that were made about the positive but also the negative things. So that could be, I think, a challenge for the future to really provide opportunities. And we have schemes in Europe, in Asia, where we can do an effort to have more of our master and PhD students through the local context get involved, better document. So I think that will be of interest for the farmers, that the number of things that they are practicing where they do not have the tools or the time, but that this can be better documented. And of course then see what could be the positive, but what could be the negative impacts. So I think there are some lessons to be learned from what we heard here today.
I'm wondering whether it works both ways as well, because that gives perhaps farmers' insights into things that they will have absolutely no idea about.
Exactly.
From another world. Yep. And I think it's a very interesting context, this sort of mixing up of knowledges. So I think it's a very exciting area, actually.
Yep. We will use the AZEM aquaculture platform to stimulate on the European side the interaction with Asia. And of course, we can see that on other continents as well.
One compliment on that. It needs open mind, as you said, David. But then I come back to education systems on primary, secondary school, and sometimes even university, where students are not trained to have an open mind. And really, that's a big, huge concern when we receive students and when I see what happens in some countries. Students' open mind is killed. Even if they come with an open mind to university, they are just told to listen and to do what I said, and that's what happened to extension officers often. They try to tell the farmers what to do. They don't have an open mind. And in education, a lot has to be changed in many countries still to make this happen. This ability to see that farmers are perhaps better than you are. Many people don't accept it.
I'd just like to reflect upon the newness that Peter Edwards talked about this and the special nature of these institutions like the Asian Institute of Technology. Just remember back in the 70s, fishermen, farmers were considered stupid. And all they needed to do, the scientists worldwide were developing academic knowledge, and the current currency at that particular time was that scientists said, if these farmers and fishermen would only do what our academic studies showed, then life would be so much better for them. Just reflect on that's where we were in the 1970s. So a lot of our systems have now changed in this way. And so I reflect upon the very special nature of the Asian Institute of Technology that has created the incentive systems so that their academics, so that their employees can get tenure, can get incentives, can get job merit increases by actually engaging at this level. Now, I want to reflect upon how special that is, because I've had the opportunity to work in the university system as a teacher in Africa at the University of Malawi and at Pajajaran University in Indonesia. And my colleagues in both of those cases did not have the incentive system. It was not in place. Most of these institutions that we have, only their traditional institutions. They do education and they do research, and they don't have this other incentive, extension, outreach, service component where they get rewarded for that. So, you know, after that sort of pontificating, I would engage on this second sort of bullet, and I would say somehow in there, it's not only research, please, it is promote research, extension, outreach, education systems, and incentives in partnerships with farmers so that we can engage these university systems just to get more on the ground, applied field experience, get these people out of the academic mode of just publishing.
Yes, thank you for your kind words about AIT. It's all coming back now, okay? Why did AIT develop this way? I set up the aquaculture program.
How smart I am.
You know why it happened that way?
Thank you.
I'm from Northern England, from a very cold, wet, and miserable place. I got my PhD in Texas in seaweed biology and taxonomy. I came to AIT. I worked with a bunch of engineers. And it's a long story, but I established an aquaculture program. I was teaching myself aquaculture, I was teaching students aquaculture, and I was doing research at the same time. So where did I learn the aquaculture from? We surveyed fish farmers in Pathum Thani province. That's what I did first, because I knew nothing about aquaculture. So I went to look at the farmers, what they were doing. And this is where the research agendas came from. I mentioned very briefly before, traditional Asian technology, which of course has more than 2,000 year history. We tried to document it from the farmers, what are you doing, and put the scientific basis behind it. So that's where it came. It was farmer driven. And the way I got into this was because I knew nothing about it. I'm a marine biologist, an ecologist, not an aquaculturist, not an Asian. I knew nothing about it, but I got stuck into it. And the first step, learn from the farmers and apply the science to try to understand what they were doing. And that's how it evolved.
I'd just like to make one interesting anecdote to add to that, because many, many, many years later when the program was running, I think it was mentioned by a Thai colleague. And on this occasion, I mean, Peter Installs has a high reputation in Thailand, but the person, I remember, he said, well, Peter's not an aquaculturist. And I thought about it, and I said, where's he coming from? We have a program now, we're teaching students. And it, where it came from was he hadn't been trained in aquaculture himself. He didn't know how to inject fish to make them breed. He didn't know how to make a fish pellet, a feed pellet. And just to add to that point, that in a way had become a barrier to anyone learning anything new. I mean, Peter was middle-aged even then, you know. There's hope for us all. There's hope for us all. Yeah. So I think that's something worth saying, that sometimes what we've learned can actually get in the way of learning new things. And it's a warning to everyone that you're never too old to learn something new. Thank you.
This my comment is with regard to the recommendation number one, documentation of the indigenous technology. I think to start with, why not we have a website so that anyone knows of the indigenous knowledge can record that one? Because for one person to go around the world and record it, and it's a one-time effort. After that, for next 10 years, we don't know what is happening. So I would suggest if some either an FAO or maybe Nandisha can start one.
Yeah.
Because Nandisha has mentioned one of the websites in India. I know also another one is called as Honeybee.
Yeah.
Just as the honeybee collects the honey from different flowers, that honeybee, it's a magazine, is also there, also it's a website. Anyone can record their whatever the innovations they're aware of in that.
Yeah.
I think it's a good idea to start a website on that.
Yeah, I think that is one of the good suggestions that we can think about. But I'd like to add one point here, that we could open it and ask the people to make the contribution. And I think Professor Anil Gupta, who started, who has been the key mover for this, starting this Innovation Foundation of India, and made India to get convinced on this. And when Melba was asking about organizing the annual competition, now India is running the 8th year, I think, if I'm not mistaken, the Innovation Week. And I understand now they receive more than 30,000 entries on innovations of the farmers. And last year, I think they gave an award to a farmer who designed a bicycle that you could ride on the water. So those things are there. And even Professor Gupta has built that Honeybee Network website. But one thing what I wanted to add is a lot of this documentation also requires close verification and documenting it carefully so that we capture everything. So it requires certain amount of skills that required to be built. So we could explore that opportunity. Even Professor Gupta's website has few of the innovations related to aquaculture and fisheries, but not many. So something needs to be done to drive this at a much bigger level so that we could get all these things being documented, particularly the black hole China, where plenty of things are available, but we do not know many of that.
Okay. Yeah, thank you, Dr. Gupta. I think it's a splendid idea, and you were addressing it partly to FAO, but probably we had a very nice side event yesterday evening on the regional networks. First of all, of course, NACA, who is the outstanding example, but also the emerging ones, the Aquaculture Network for Africa, NASI for the Eastern and Central European countries, and the Latin America and Network for the Americas. And for these networks, I see a real role in documenting these innovations, because they are the ones who are supposed to have their national focal points, who are supposed to link with the national institutions. So it's probably better addressed to them than to FAO.
Thank you. Panel, my point was, why do we recommend something that cannot be implemented? That's my point. We are recommending something in the Phuket consensus that cannot be implemented. Rice fish farmers will continue rice fish farming, and the people who use trash fish will continue trash fish use, and the people, Bangladesh prawn farmers will use the mussels. Therefore, my point is, I'm not against any one of those systems, but we are recommending in this consensus a thing that we cannot implement or adapt. Thank you.
Yeah. I think that is something that we need to look at a greater depth. But definitely, as I said, I repeat once again, even in Bangladesh case, a lot of changes are taking place. People To begin with, they use the snail meat. Today, they are moving very aggressively to the pellets. So systems keep changing. But how intelligent you are to articulate your policies, ideas to influence the policymakers, you bring the change so that it has a greater impact. So that is something that we need to discuss. But before, I think that we can do it in the plenary, I would like to take this opportunity to thank all the panel members who made brilliant contributions. And I think we are one of the other persons whom I would like to thank from FAO, Dr. Ruth. I think she has been the key supporter for me in terms of putting this document together, particularly from the other part of the world where I have little contacts. I think ultimately we are coming out with some document which could possibly stimulate further development in this particular area. And if any of you have any ideas that you would like to contribute, you would like to take note of this, please do send us to Matthias or me or anyone whom you know, so that we take note of these important innovations of the people or the indigenous knowledge. We get that into the final document. So thank you very much. Thank you for all the panel for bearing with my last minute delays.
A good approach to the panel. Thank you so much. This has been a good discussion, and I believe we have done good justice to this topic. It needs maybe a month or more, but nonetheless, I want to thank the audience for your patience. We have read a little stretched this, but please enjoy your lunch.